The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Greetings, everyone. My name is Meg Kaller, and I'll just give you a brief introduction. I've been blessed with many beautiful teachers in my life, starting in my childhood with my substitute mother, who was of American Indian and Black. Ancestry. And she was an amazingly wise woman with a heart as big as the sky. Her name was Erminie. And it's thanks to her that I had an example of what it might mean to incarnate, hopefully someday, that kind of beautiful wisdom, kindness, strength, and above all, kindness. And then at the age of 21 in 1968, I became a disciple of Shunryu Suzuki Roshi. And in 1971, I received lay ordination from him. And his gift has been immense. And I see him every day. And then about 15 years ago, I took a turn towards the Theravada tradition and have trained with Gil Fronsdahl, Jack Kornfield, Venerable Analyo, and Aya Anandabodhi, among others. So the theme for this week will be cultivating peace. And I'd like to explore with you five of the 12 steps taught by the Buddha, which are the conditions for allowing one to step off the karmic path and onto the dharmic path, which leads to freedom. And this is from the Upanishad Sutta. It's Samyutta Nikaya 12.23, which Bhikkhu Bodhi translates as the Proximate Cause Sutta. So you may be familiar with dependent origination or dependent arising, which begins with ignorance and leads all the way to suffering, pain, lamentation, and despair. And this other path of conditioned arising is called the liberative or transcendent dependent arising. And this one actually begins with dukkha, where we left off from the karmic path. And the Buddha's teachings put in place a series of 12 conditions that create the ground for awakening to arise. So in all of the Buddha's teachings, there's a wide spectrum of experiences. Which they may start from very small beginnings, and then they progressively deepen and become more intense and profound. The Buddha had many similes for Nibbana, awakening, full liberation. The supreme happiness, the supreme safety, the supreme peace, and among others. And so one of these will, you know, resonate more or less with each of us. And in the meditation just now, we explored how when the mind becomes settled, we can notice and take in the subtle flavor of joy and well-being that can accompany the simplicity of being fully present. And this is true in everyday life as well. I'm sure you've had the experience of maybe seeing dewdrops in the morning shining in a beautiful spider web. And if the mind is quiet enough and present enough, wow, there is a feeling of joy in just being there for that. And so the experience of joy is perhaps the pivotal condition in this liberative dependent arising. And there, again, with joy, there is an incredibly wide spectrum of really subtle joy, all the way to intense bliss. And they're all good, and they're all worth appreciating and cultivating. So it's kind of amazing that just with the simplicity of awareness, really being there for our experience, subtle experiences of joy and well-being arise quite naturally. In these states of mind that give rise to the conditions necessary for awakening, in the scheme from dukkha, unsatisfactoriness being the first one, it's also the first noble truth, clearly seeing and appreciating the truth of dukkha, of unsatisfactoriness in this karmic samsaric world. And the dharmic response to that is quite different from the karmic response. And if we choose the dharmic response, it tends to be one of confidence or faith that the path taught by the Buddha is a good path to be on. And when we have that confidence in the Eightfold Path, it can easily give rise naturally to gladness. We're glad to be on a path. And we don't know how far we'll advance, but we do know that little by little, our dukkha diminishes. So, from gladness, that's the condition that gives rise to joy in this scheme of liberative dependent arising. Concentration can also give rise to joy. Tranquility can give rise to joy. And so what I'd like to suggest today is that when you have an experience of dharmic joy, to really stop for it and notice it, take it in. And just doing this will help you to appreciate and cultivate the value of the state of mind, which is joy. And it's valuable, as I said, whether it's very subtle or whether it's very strong. And then joy, in turn, leads us to tranquility and the condition of being able to have a tranquil body and a tranquil mind provides the fertile ground for contentment to arise. This is sukha, which is the opposite of dukkha, sometimes translated also as happiness. But it's a much quieter happiness than the joy was. The joy is more uplifting and the happiness is more transversal. And from this quiet contentment, that is the condition that gives rise to samadhi. So all of these conditions up until contentment can be cultivated. But from that point on, We have to get out of the way. We have to become less of a doer and more of just allowing samadhi to arise. So we invite samadhi, concentration, or unification. But we can't try to make it happen. If we do, it will certainly fail. But if we do put in place these conditions of joy and tranquility and contentment, then, you know, that implies that the mind is already quite settled, and samadhi then can come to us, and it comes as a gift. We don't orchestrate it, we receive it. And we could also say that samadhi is pivotal as well, in the sense that this condition of unification is what gives rise to insight. This is when, where the mind is together enough to really see through the truth of dukkha. We really see it, we really know. We know it for ourselves. And we also know for ourselves the truth of anicca, of impermanence, or as Gil says, inconstancy. It's we see it as clear as day. And we see as clear as day the truth of not self, that anything that is conditioned is by definition unsatisfactory in the sense that it's going to disappear and we can't rely upon it. And with these insights, that's what sets in motion the natural unfolding of awakening. And the Buddha describes it as water flowing downhill. First in little rivulets, and then tiny streams and bigger streams and small rivers and then big rivers. And finally, all the way to the vast ocean of Nibbana. And these steps, we don't cultivate either. They will come with the benefit of insight, just like the water rolling down the hill. And these last steps are disenchantment, where we see through the fiction that conditioned things can bring us happiness, and dispassion, where we lose interest in pursuing the karmic stream, and then cessation and nibbana, and then the knowledge of Nibbana. So I'd like to just read you a poem from the Dhammapada that kind of illustrates this dharmic joy. Tasting the flavor of solitude and peace, one becomes free of distress and evil, drinking in the flavor of Dharma joy. And then another one from the Dhammapada, more intense. For a practitioner with a peaceful mind who enters an empty dwelling and clearly sees the true Dharma, there is superhuman joy. So as you go through your day to day, if you like, you might try putting on a bumper sticker, "I stop for joy." And see if you can experience it in different qualities, from subtle to some perhaps more intense. And then when you feel it, if you like, on the inhale, try radiating out this joy to all of the beings, human and other, that you may come into contact with today. Breathing in receptive awareness, breathing out, radiating peaceful joy.